Charleston County Podcast. Let's try that again. Charleston County Podcast presented by Comedy Zone Charleston. This is part two of this week's episode right here on Blog Talk Radio with our good buddy Marcus Oglesby. Enjoy the interview, everybody.
I am rolling right now. Oh. Genius. Oh. Genius. Thanks for the genius ideas.
Fuck you.
It took him longer to think of fuck you than it took him to exit the room.
All right, Charleston Comedy Podcast. I'm Brandon Lowe with my buddy Sam is on the podcast. My non-consensual gay lover, too, secretly. Not
think,
now, because it's going to be on here.
Considered rape.
In California, according to Marcus. All right, we have Marcus Oglesby in the studio. He's a local comedian. I thought you lived in South Point, Ohio, like everybody else, I think.
That seems to be the misconception, but yes, thank you for having me.
You performed at the Comedy Zone last weekend.
Yes, Saturday night.
And tell us about the experience.
It was great, and I want to thank you guys for the part that you all played in it with the podcast. You know, just getting me in the door there was awesome. I've reached out to him a few times and never had any really reply, and I understood, didn't hold any grudges. But the fact that you guys are partnering with them, getting local comics in the door, thank you, first of all. But having said that, it was great. It was actually, it was amazing. They have it, is it, what, the Holiday Inn?
Right.
Down there?
Yeah.
So the room was packed. I did the late show Saturday night, opened for Todd Riley was the feature, and Philly Blowden, who I got to speak with quite a bit, was the headliner. He was amazing. And my set went great, and got to network with comics. And that's the most important thing. I was telling you, it is an invaluable resource for local comics. If you're out there, get with these guys. Call into the podcast. This is a resource we have not had in this area, and I love it.
Well, we appreciate that very much. Man, that makes me and Sam want to cry right now.
I think Sam's tearing up.
Yeah, we spoke with Philly last week, and he was fun on the podcast. He had a lot of energy. I think that's what I enjoyed about Philly was his energy. When he came on the phone, he was excited to come to West Virginia, and you know, he didn't make any West Virginia jokes. Sometimes comedians come through, and a lot of them, like the guys that we interviewed that's coming to the Comedy Zone this weekend, they always say, I drove through there, but I've never stopped.
Right.
And I don't know why. And I asked those guys, is it because you've seen, like, Hills Have Eyes? Or, like, what's the deal, you know? Do you think we're just, like, that part of Virginia that they get gas in Pennsylvania. Put us over here? Or just we're just the pass-through to all the other states that matter?
That's it. They get gas in Pennsylvania and hope they make it to Virginia.
Yeah.
Hope they make it to Whiffle.
And we got in a conversation, and meth came up, of course, and I said, I'm pretty sure this is the meth capital of the world, or not the world, but the country. And they kind of laughed, and they said, well, we thought Ohio was. And I was like, I don't know about they were saying Ohio, that they're the capital. And, you know, I told them that Ohio would, they would claim anything, because they're always like the inventors of everything.
They might
like
have
you go to Ohio, we're like, no, we actually invented that.
Yeah, we invented that here in Ohio. They might actually have it because they've got so many more people.
That's
maybe.
True. That ratio. Sam lived there, too. The Wright brothers are from Ohio, correct?
Right. So that's why
they made the plane.
Oh, they take credit for that.
In North Carolina. So both states kind of battle that.
Oh, I didn't
And say,
realize.
Well, we have the Wright brothers. And then now I was like, well, they were born here.
Yeah,
and
so
then,
it's like the birthplace of aviation.
they have that actually on their license plates. You can get the Wright brothers license plates in both North Carolina and Ohio.
Wow, I didn't even realize about Ohio.
I was confused when I moved to Columbus. I was confused about that because I saw on license. I'm like, in North Carolina, the Wright brothers went down there and flew the plane out of North Carolina.
I've been to
right?
Giddy Hawk, right?
So can't that? I don't know how they share that. But then someone said, well, they were born here, and then they took their idea down there. And I'm thinking, why would you guys claim them? If they did that to you guys, they just lived here their whole life and decided to take this great Invention down to another state, and then now that state needs to take, I don't know, I'm ranting.
Maybe they didn't have a good wind in Ohio.
It's so windy in Ohio. The first time.
Too cold, maybe? The plane was
freezing? It's always windy. Like, the first time.
They made their first wings out of paper.
Shout out to all my Ohio comic friends. They can claim the national championship.
Yeah, they can. Undisputed. Undisputed national champions.
Undisputed champion of the world.
Buckeyes fans are the worst. They're the worst. Definitely. They're the worst. And this made it worse.
Is it?
Because now they can walk around. Because I have buddies in Columbus, like, on their Facebook, just like, yo, bro, got my new shirt, you know, the Undisputed Champions, putting quotations and Undisputed Champion right up on their status. I don't know. It's something else for them to boast about.
This is a big deal. I brag about it too, but I think my Facebook thing was, congratulations, Buckeyes, you are a delicious dessert.
The chocolate one. They're actually, the real one is a poisonous nut that you will never want to eat in your life. Who inspired you to be a comedian? Oh, I asked some people that. Who's your inspirations?
Huge. But it's so hard to answer without leaving out a ton of people that I'd be criticized for. But as far as knowing it was a job, I'll probably be criticized for this, but knowing it was a job, that it was something you could do for a living, was when I saw Bill Cosby himself. And I had heard comedy before that all my life. Dad had vinyl records of Mom's Mabley and Red Fox and Richard Pryor and all those growing up. But I didn't realize it was something you could do for a living until I saw Bill Cosby sitting in a chair talking about the dentist in front of 1,000 people, and it hit me, you know, especially when he started TV, that was a job. So I would think that's probably the biggest motivation for even realizing it was possible. But after that, George Carlin's always been my favorite writer.
Now, was Cosby, was that pre-rape?
Probably post-rape occurrence.
Current,
right? It was
probably, as you say that right now.
It was post. Accusation, definitely. It was pre-accusation.
Pre-accusation. And but, it still hasn't even been proven.
Right. And it's an accusation. I'm not here to...
we can't say that Bill Cosby
belittle any
anything.
Claims. You know, no doubt. There seems like a lot of evidence leaning a certain way.
When you went in to tell me who... you gave the legal before you told me.
Absolutely.
Like, you don't have to do that because he has not been... charged with anything.
But he has in social media. You know, the court system being right. charged is one thing.
Yeah.
Getting charged in social media can ruin your life.
Well, there's a couple of things. There's people taking things too serious and posting jokes that maybe a comedian that said a certain joke, or a video on YouTube, you know, just taking kind of jokes too serious, going to comedy shows and not expecting to laugh for some reason. I don't know why there's always people that come to comedy shows and do that.
Absolutely. Double-edged sword, right? I totally get what they're saying in that article or whatever it was. I understand, but it's not the death of comedy. It's not hurting comedy. It's hurting the business of comedy. It's hurting the, you know, wallets in comedy, maybe. On the other hand, it's opening up doors for people that, you know, have the doors slammed in their face. People like that Bo, whatever his name is, that does the internet sensation.
Oh, Bo Burnham?
Yeah, Bo Burnham. Guys like that maybe not would have got a door open for him. You know, you got social media. Dane Cook started with MySpace.
Right.
It can blow you up. It can be hugely beneficial. It gives you an opportunity to promote yourself, which I try to promote myself, over-promote myself when I can. But it lets people hear you. It gives you a voice. It lets you open doors for yourself. So there is a double-edged sword. Now, on the other hand, it's so easy for people to get laughs. It's so easy to get comedy. If you like a joke of the day page, you get a joke every day for the rest of your life,
right?
Right? So it may be a little harder to get people to come out and listen to it, but that's why quality is so important. That's why you have to be good at your craft. And you have to make people come into that, say, hey, you know what? This is better than Facebook. You know, this is better than reading a meme. So you have to step up your game, maybe. But on the other hand, it can open a lot of doors. So
yeah,
double-edged sword for sure.
Yeah, and if it wasn't for the interwebs, you wouldn't be able to hear this podcast, or we wouldn't be able
Absolutely.
To, you know, promote that. I think social media, like you said, it goes both ways. It's just how you use it.
Yeah.
You know, Facebook was originally created by, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, and he made it for colleges to communicate and network back and forth. It was all about just networking, you know, these
it was
students.
Basically a dating site.
Right. It was connecting these students with a lifestyle that they could kind of get outside the whole studies and kind of just meet other people from other states.
Right. And I use it heavily. I don't use Twitter so much. And I think it's because
on Twitter,
I don't have enough followers for it to be fun for me.
Right.
If you're listening, let me plug my Twitter, at Marcus Oger. M-A-R-C. No. Give me M-A-R-C-U-S-O-G-R-E. Please follow me, and I'll tweet more. That's the deal. If I get more followers, I'll tweet more. But until then, I love my Facebook family.
Yeah.
They're good to me.
We had a Twitter for roughly, I think it was a day and a half.
Yeah.
I gave up on Twitter. Yeah, because this is what happened. I created the Twitter. I was like, okay, this is another way of getting, because a lot of people use Twitter, especially in the entertainment business, comedians, everybody has a Twitter.
Right.
So I thought it'd be easier to just do the @, like you're yelling at somebody, like, hey, come over here and look at our page. And I got 25 followers, and more than half were whores on there, like models, like,
robot.
Hey, look at my photos. So, I kind of gave up on, and tweeting's just, to me, it's something so pretentious about it.
Right. And if those were actual whores, it would be even funner, because those are robots. They're not even real.
And they tell you to come over. Yeah, so I couldn't do it. I suck at it. Maybe we can bring it back up, and Sam can. Sam, do you like Twitter?
I have a couple of Twitter accounts, but most of the time when I used it was when I had a business, you know, and I was doing the mobile food truck. Like, I would just let people know where I am. And I think it's cool with that, but, like, what I hate is the limitation of 143 characters, because I feel like my brain
can't handle
those limitations.
That's what I was mad about. What I was mad about was I was trying to make our Twitter name, not my name. I didn't want my name on there. I wanted it the Charleston Comedy Podcast as my name.
It takes up half your characters.
And it takes up half my characters. Why is there a limit? I don't understand that. Like, why can't I claim my pod? This is the name
of
it.
Why is the name part of the characters?
So and then I tried, like, CCP and, like, all these, like, I was like, why am I using acronyms? And why do I have to do
this? Probably got something to do with bandwidth that I don't understand.
I can't do it. And,
it's ridiculous.
So Twitter is out the question. I can't do it. I mean, you can bring it up, and you can run if you want to.
It seems futile.
I hate it.
If you're not famous and you don't have a shitload of followers,
right?
It seems futile to tell people that you're at the grocery store when, you know, 20 people might see it, and you don't.
Yeah, you're followed.
I've got more than 20 followers, by the way, but 20 people see it, and all of a sudden, you know, what good is that?
There's 19 people that saw this, yay, and 60% of them are whores. From Blogspot, trying to get me to look at their photos.
If you heard the crickets, not only did I forget to turn my phone off, but it was a telemarketer. I should have answered that.
Yeah, you should have.
That would have been funny.
Put it on the show.
Yes.
All right.
But Twitter, I've been on Instagram a little bit more too, and posting pictures in there, and I just share them with Twitter. So that's all my tweets are just shares from Instagram.
All right. And I told you I enjoyed your videos too, because you post a lot of funny videos and some... it's kind of like you're just kind of the day in the life of Marcus.
I'm trying to
be
diverse.
You should just do a day in the life of Mountain and Marcus.
Well, one thing that I'll plug and that my son Mountain is going to be a big part of is I'm putting together my own hunting, fishing, outdoor show. It's called Outdoors with Og. And filmed some episodes. I put like a teaser kind of on YouTube of me actually killing a deer this year. So I am a hunter. Emails. I kill my own food, and I will not apologize. But I killed an 8-point on camera this year and got the whole thing. I've got a hunting show on my YouTube channel, Marcus Oglesby. Google me, you'll find it.
I'm waiting for the moment where you have to do the me, myself, and Irene and literally choke out.
It's been done. They stole it. That's my bit.
For the show.
They stole my material.
I want to see that.
I have written about this. I actually have had to choke out a deer once. I was trying to finish it. It was suffering, and I'm not about suffering. So I was trying to finish it, and I'll save you the gruesome details. But it ended up in a little bit of a wrestling match with an 8-point, which I don't ever recommend. One day I'm going to talk about that on stage, but I've written the story. So
they're like all muscle.
ton of muscle. And all he had was his front legs and his neck. And I was really heavy at the time, and he was basically picking me up off the ground.
That is crazy.
With his neck.
I would never, like people, like you said, people don't realize how serious that is. Like, if you get on the ground with a
deer,
it's gonna fuck you up.
And when their adrenaline's pumping, don't get close. Don't try to feed them. If you got kids, keep them away from them. They're wild animals.
They're wild animals.
They are. They're not
Stay
pets.
Stay away from the deer, man.
They're not pets. I love
feed them at fucking zoos.
That video.
At the zoo, don't give them any food.
That video where the lady's in the kitchen with the little baby deer, and that's cute and all, but I keep waiting for it to, like, donkey kick her right in the gut, steal the Cheetos and run.
Make one of those gangster baller videos.
Oh, you mean like the Thug Life?
Yeah, the Thug Life.
Yeah, like a Thug Life.
I put a whole series of Thug Life videos for our podcast page. So if anybody wants to go on the Facebook and look at them.
Those are great.
I love them.
No, yeah, there's always those videos of like the one hunter who's getting like punched the fuck out by the deer, and he's like, oh, shit. It's like, wow, wow. Oh, God. Oh, right in my cunt.
He kicked me in the cunt.
They need to do those. I love those videos when bears attack, like the news reporters are interviewing them, and all of a sudden this grizzly bear grabs them. And they're shocked by that. Should be a Thug Life video right there. Boo, bitch, get out the way.
Did you see the one video of the one reporter down south who was like out in the middle of somewhere, and like all of a sudden a bug flew in his mouth, and he's like, man, what fuck is this country ass shit?
He got like sissified really quick. Yeah. He was kind of hardcore, and then he screamed like a girl, man.
When you first got into comedy, what were some of the biggest challenges you kind of had?
That's an easy question. The biggest challenge is something that you guys are helping out with, and the Comedy Zone is helping out with. Was somewhere to do it. That was the biggest thing for me. I've been wanting to do comedy for a decade before I tried it, and been dying to do it, and started writing and wrote for about 6, 7, 8 months, and then started looking for somewhere to actually do comedy, and found an open mic in Huntington. It was at the Thirsty Whale. And I found that I went there. I had to beg for 5 minutes. I brought three people, and there was like 4 or 5 people in the room total. And three of them was with me, and I still had to beg for 5 minutes. But I got on, and I did a 6-minute set called Feed the Chickens, and I did really good. I fell in love with it from there on. But finding places to do it and finding ways to network without a comedy club. And the Funny Bone had just closed down right before I started, I guess. I've been doing it 3.5 years. So the Funny Bone had closed, and there was nowhere to do it. As far as the stage fright, I do music too, and I'd been to Nashville and on songwriters' stages and stuff. And since high school, I've loved public speaking, junior high even. There's videos of me that I hope never surface. But they're not X-rated. They were filmed in school, so there's nothing bad.
They're on a YouTube.
Film. Yeah, so the stage fright was never an issue for me. I love performing. I love getting up in front of it. I love seeing people laugh and just being entertained and forgetting about stuff for a while. So that was the easy part. The writing is also comes natural. I've been writing since I was a little kid, whether it's stories or poems or whatever. So that wasn't hard either. I really love writing comedy. So I had the time and the material that I could feel good about. It was just finding a place to do it, and I met some guys there, and that's networking. It's all about networking, even on the smallest scale. At that Thirsty Whale show, I met James Chase, and I met Josh McDonald, Ian Nolte, and those guys run the Black Sheep open mic in Huntington. So I was like, where can I perform? He said, hey, we do this every Wednesday. At the time, it was every Wednesday. So then I went down there, started doing that every time I could get up. And from there, started doing, impressed a couple people that invited me to the Whiskey River shows, and that impressed, and it just keeps going. So networking is invaluable, even on the smallest open mic.
Right, and that's my next thing I was going to ask you. Do you actually enjoy the open mic stuff? Some comedians kind of like, when you first start, you really enjoy the open mic because it gets you up there, it gets you opportunity to work on, you know, your material, your stage presence, all that good stuff. And, you know, you finally get to do what you wanted to do in front of people. And then once you really start to venture off, it's almost like comedians kind of, they get kind of like that sour taste in their mouth about open mics.
And I think this is the problem with that. They go into it expecting to enjoy an open mic.
Right.
You're not supposed to enjoy an open mic. There's nothing enjoyable about getting up in front of strangers that didn't pay to get in there, so they really have nothing invested.
Right.
Right.
That's,
and a lot of times it's at a bar, and they're distracted. They're shooting pool. There's, you know, a ball game on. So you're not supposed to enjoy that. It's not what it's for. It's to make you better.
Right.
It's to find out if you even have the balls to do it.
Right.
It's not easy.
Right.
So that's what it's for. It's not to be enjoyed. And I still do them. I still go to Mojo's every now and then, and I still bomb. It feels like you're bombing, but you're not bombing. You're just talking to people who don't really care to listen.
Right.
So that's what an open mic is. You're not supposed to enjoy it. It's supposed to be a doorway to what you can enjoy. So when you start doing some small shows and people are paying to get in there and they have something invested, they want you to make them laugh, then it's a whole different ball game. And sometimes you still, you know, have struggles and people that don't want to listen. But they go in, you know, you should never go into your first job,
right,
whether it be bagging groceries or scraping snow or whatever it is. Don't go into that first job expecting to enjoy it or expecting to have fun,
yeah,
right? You got to, it's work.
Yeah, right.
That's
right.
It's a job. It's work. It's the work part of it.
Right.
So I think that's where, you know, people set themselves up with expectations that ain't there.
Right. Right. What about you, Sam? You enjoy the open mic stuff? Bring you in here.
Well, I mean, I do, and it was like what he said. I mean, it's work, and I think that's where I usually end up finding my biggest struggle is I go to these open mics, and I'm like, okay, like people are telling me this is funny or whatever, and then I go to these open mics, and it's like, womp, womp, womp.
Right.
And I'm like, what the fuck just happened?
Right.
You know, like 1 week, the one joke, I tell it the same way, and it's like,
yeah,
bam, 1 point it hits, tell the same joke the same exact way the next week, and
It's a different crowd, too, because like you said, no one's paying to get in there.
Right.
A lot of those, I mean, some of those bars are regulars, so then you got regulars that come in there and like, there's comedy night tonight. Ugh.
Right, and that's what, you know, I wanted to comment on his point. I mean, that's probably one of the most brilliant points I've heard about the open mic. I mean, for real. Like,
practice. I mean, you should go up there. It's work. It's practice. You get up there. You're really just working and polishing up that joke to take it to something that where somebody's actually going to pay to enjoy it.
Absolutely. I've got so many jokes that I do in my hour-long show that start out maybe as a Facebook post or something. I go up that night and try it on an audience that didn't really want to hear it. And I still, you know, judge the reaction, but it's not for them. It's
right.
For me. It's work. It's getting out there and doing an internship so
right.
you can get a job.
Right.
And there's always that crowd work, and there's always a limitation, and they're absolutely right. You do have to cater your material a little bit.
Right.
You know, one of the things I like to say is I do what's funny to me, and hopefully the crowd will agree. And that's true to a very large extent. However, I'm not going to, you know, put myself out there for failure either. So if I know a demographic or a certain crowd, you know, whatever the makeup of the audience is not going to be friendly to a certain joke, I won't tell that joke that night. And that's why writing is important. You know, it's so important to write all the time, because if you don't have enough material to put something funny in where you took something out, then what are you going to do? If you go into a room full of businessmen and you don't want to do your dick and fart jokes in front of them, are you going to turn down the gig?
No.
You better be writing. You better be writing, and you better know all of it. That's why open mics are important. You know, I don't go to the open mics to do my opening bit. I go to open mics to try out and work on the stuff that I'm going to need in reserve.
Right.
So when the drunk lady yells out something about Nerf football, I've got a Nerf football bit I can come out with because I write all the time.
Funny thing about them Nerf footballs, lady. what's some projects and stuff you're working on? We're speaking to Marcus Oglesby, by the way.
Yes, yeah,
I need to put you out there again, plug you a couple more times. We're very thankful you've come to speak to us because you spoke very highly of us today.
Well,
I feel like we have a gun to your head at this point. People probably think we have a gun to your head telling you.
Not at all.
But
you know what? What you're doing, the publicity, the promotion, that is more influential than a 38.
Right.
You know, this is my job. This is my career.
There you go.
So you do have a gun to my head. I have an incentive to make sure that you guys succeed so that it helps us succeed.
Well, that's
so,
a good message.
You know, this is a project I'm working on right now.
There you
talking
go.
To you
there
guys.
There you go. Currently on the project.
But
some other stuff you're working on, though.
Well, like I said, I'm always filming my outdoors with Ogue Television. My goal for it is to put together a few episodes and by maybe next fall or the summertime, be able to pitch it to public television, you know, and YouTube. I'm going to obviously have a channel for YouTube.
Take that.
And I'm hoping so. I'm trying to put an angle on it that I don't think you see in a lot of other hunting shows, especially. And
public, like West Virginia's public broadcast. Like,
exactly.
I think that's my
first step forward.
I think TJ may have somebody he knows over there. Maybe.
See, networking. You know, you never know who can help you or who can't. But that's my goal for that. Right now it's rabbit season. So whatever the season is, I'm filming for that. Trout fishing's coming up. They are stocking. And, you know, then turkey season.
Deer wrestling
I put off to the fall. You don't want to. You got to put that in a time and place. But I've got several shows coming up. I've started getting into music a lot more. Playing, I'm a songwriter, decent enough singer to get my songs across.
Cool.
And I lived in Nashville for 7 years after college. I went to Concord College in Athens, West Virginia. I'm from Beckley, by the way, Shady Spring, to be a little more specific. So I am a hometown boy. Lived in Nashville, did the songwriting thing. I never really chased it hard enough. You either have to get a job and eat or chase your dream, and I like to eat. So
everybody's chasing
made
the
my
dream
choice.
In Nashville for
well,
music.
Yes,
huge.
And it is. It's
music
so competitive.
City. It's music
and
city.
I got a lot of good feedback, but that was, you know, 18 years ago. I'm a different human being now.
Right.
And my music shows it. I write a lot more blues. It's a lot more depth to it. But I'm doing that. I'm trying to incorporate that into my shows as well, so be more versatile. Friday night is the biggest show I got coming up. I'm doing the second show I've ever done in my hometown of Beckley, West Virginia. And last year it sold out. I was so emotionally moved about it, they had to turn people away. And,
last year you sold out
in advance.
They had to actually turn
in advance. They had to turn people away. If that happens this year, I'm going to talk to them about a second show.
That is awesome.
But the love and support I'm getting
from
my hometown through Facebook, really, has been incredible. And the tickets are selling like crazy. I'm sure it's going to sell out now. If you want to go to McBee's Irish Pub in Beckley, West Virginia, I'm going to have a few people on there with me. I'll have Destiny Rain is going to open, and then Lynn Browder is going to do a few minutes, and Aaron Barbel is going to do a few minutes. And then I'm going to do 40 minutes of comedy, and then I'm going to do 45 minutes of original music. So it's going to be a good show, and I hope everybody has a good time. It's good. It's actually my birthday show.
My God.
Yeah, I turned old. I hit old age. I turned 40 years old on the 19th. Yeah, I know. I look good, don't I?
There you go.
But it's a birthday celebration as well. So anyway.
All right, last question for you. I ask all the comedians, and you sound like a really smart dude.
Fooled you, didn't I?
So, yeah, you did, I think. We ask this to a lot of comedians. It's usually my clothes are on a lot of comedians. It's the best advice you could give comedians just starting out and doing comedy.
Well, starting out, if you've never done it and you think you want to do it, write 3 minutes and get on stage. That's what I've always said. You know, don't tell me you got a funny joke or people think you're funny. I don't want to hear that. Write 3 minutes and get on stage, and you'll find out really quick if you cut out for it. And if you might not be good at it, but you could still love it, and you could learn to do it. If you have been, you know, already experiencing it and you know trying to get going, Lord knows I'm not far enough along to tell anybody how to make it. But the main thing I tell folks is, you know, besides the craft, besides writing and besides rehearsing and memorizing your material and just knowing it inside and out, that's the obvious part. The other things is two things: be funny and be nice. Be funny and be nice. Because if you're not funny, you ain't going to make it. And if you're a dickhead, you can forget it.
Right.
So that's the two things I tell anybody and in any walk of life, you know. Maybe not the funny part, but usually be funny and be nice. You know,
just be nice to people.
Every successful preacher is funny and nice.
There you go.
You know, you have to be funny and nice. So that's my advice.
All right. Well, I lied. This isn't the last thing I want you to do.
Good.
On the show. But remember when we played that game with you where you did the voices.
I vaguely remember something about butt plugs.
I want you to redo that.
I'm gonna forget it.
Advertise butt plugs using your best movie voice.
Best movie voice, man. And I don't have a clue what voice I used at
I think you used the and now.
Oh, you mean the announcer voice?
Yeah, announcer voice. There you go.
Oh,
yeah,
man. And you're advertising butt plugs.
Yeah.
Okay. And now, coming for our feature attraction, we've got a celebrity in the house, Mr. Mike Tyson. Tell us about your product, Mike.
Well, I'd like to come on here and tell you about something that really helped me in my struggles, in my hard times, in my darkest days when people were against me and everybody was just trying to bend Mike over and just take charge of my life. You know, like Don King. He's always trying to get me, Don King. And the only thing that saved me was my butt plugs.
Marcus Oglesby, everybody.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, man. Appreciate
Mom, I'm
you.
Sorry about that one.
Oh, that was awesome. Thanks for coming on the podcast, man. And we wish you luck with
support
your
live comedy, man. These guys are rocking it. Come to the Comedy Zone.
There we go. All right. Marcus Oglesby on the Charleston Comedy Podcast.